Welcome to democracyonthemove.org, a podcast tribute to the people and organizations who dare to reimagine our nation and drive it toward its true democratic principles. Content for this episode was recorded on Saturday, April 24, 2021. I'm Dan Schaefer, your host for today's podcast, and thank you for joining us today. Now, before we get started, I'd like to bring you up to date on Mr. Bobby Bostic. If you recall, we've been talking with and about Mr. Bostic in the past few episodes. Mr. Bostic is a 42-year-old man sitting in prison, where he's been since the age of 16. When he was a kid, he committed armed robbery and carjacking and received a 241-year sentence. He will not be eligible for parole until he is 112 years old. Now, numerous people and organizations, including politicians led by Missouri State Representative Nick Schroer, as well as police officers, the ACLU, the judge that sentenced Mr. Bostic, as well as ordinary citizens such as myself, have been advocating for clemency. Mr. Bostic even sat for a BBC interview back in 2019, and he has people in the UK advocating for his release as well. His clemency request has been in Governor Mike Parson's queue for nearly 2 years now. In the meantime, Mr. Bostic has just released his seventh book, available on Amazon, along with numerous essays and poetry and, in general, highly inspirational messages to anyone willing to read what he has written. He attends college classes through correspondence and is close to getting his second degree. He focuses much of his time on helping youth all over the world stay out of trouble, using himself as an example. He hopes to be granted clemency or at least an early parole hearing in the near future, and he has big plans to start a nonprofit organization upon his release. He will focus his time on helping young men stay out of prison. We had another opportunity to talk with Mr. Bostic a short time ago, and we are releasing that conversation as a separate podcast on this Wednesday evening, April 28th, at 8 p.m. Eastern. On that podcast, Mr. Bostic will read some of his writings. The acoustics are challenging, as Mr. Bostic had to sit at a phone in a common area of prison while recording, but the impact of his words comes through without interference. I hope you'll tune in and listen. Here at Democracy on the Move, we not only believe in personal freedom, but we believe in the vastness of human compassion. Mr. Bostic doesn't make any excuses for his behavior. He owns up to everything he's done, and he's apologized to his victims, and now he asks us for compassion. I think we, as a society and as individuals, should give him a second chance. We'll keep you updated on Mr. Bostic's situation here at Democracy on the Move. But in the meantime, as I mentioned, please tune in to the podcast being released this Wednesday, where we feature Mr. Bostic in his own words. And now on to today's guest. Today we're speaking with Mr. Larry Bradley about an organization known as Missourians for Ranked Choice Voting. Ranked Choice Voting, or RCV for short, may seem like a progressive concept, and yet here we are in the American heartland talking about progressive ideas. Well, if you associate the heartland with socially conservative thinking, you may need to take a second look. As the show-me state, Missouri has typically kept an open mind on things. You might as well equate show-me with the expression, go with what works. Well, what's not working in this country, and you may have heard me say this numerous times in this podcast, is the current two-party system, otherwise known as the duopoly. The Democrats and the Republicans pull in opposite directions in this game of political tug-of-war, and it's the people in the middle, and Missouri is geographically very close to the center of the United States, it's the people in the middle that get squeezed. Now, you go to Walmart to buy coffee, and you see 24 choices of different brands, different grinding methods, and different packaging. You go to the voting booth to cast your vote, and you get a choice of just two. Americans have accepted this limited choice in politics because, at some level, the two parties have had a sufficient number of sub-parties to make it appear as though you're getting more than just two choices. But lately, the parties have coalesced into singular entities with singular approaches to politics. And as the parties drift apart, they take on increasingly radical perspectives, creating a chasm in between them, a chasm into which many people fall into as they become independents. Indeed, Gallup made a historic announcement earlier this year as the percent of people who identify as independents has reached 50%. Now, since then, it has fallen to 41% in the most recent poll, with the Republicans gaining nothing out of this deal. But it just goes to show that people in general are getting tired of the duopoly. But why is there duopoly in the first place? Why is it so difficult for third parties to gain traction and offer more choices at the voting booth? Our discussion today with Mr. Larry Bradley will help shed light on this issue. As a Missouri native, Larry Bradley knows this state and the Midwest in general very well. He's earned his undergraduate degree in political science from Missouri State University and then spent several years as an Army infantry officer. During his Army career, he studied and earned an MBA in management from the University of Tennessee. In his Army career, he not only commanded a mechanized infantry unit in Europe, but he took the deep dive into the Army's research and development side of procurement. That journey exposed him to the political and economic dynamics of national defense. After leaving the military, Larry became involved in sales, earning himself the informal title of Doctor of Sales at a Fortune 500 company. Over the years, Larry developed a passion for this country and became concerned with its future. He learned a lot about how our country works and how it doesn't work. His concerns over our nation's future drove him to found an organization known as The Center Strikes Back. He also wrote a book, Neither Liberal Nor Conservative Be, and he released a DVD of one of his more popular speeches, Why the Two-Party System Isn't Working Anymore and What to Do About It. In addition, Larry has become the driving force behind efforts to ensure the will of the majority prevails by bringing instant runoff voting and other voting reforms to elections in all 50 states. So, Mr. Larry Bradley, welcome to Democracy on the Move, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
So, before we get started, I'd just like to get a personal perspective on you. What caused you to get involved in election reform in general and ranked choice voting in particular?
Okay, I appreciate the question. Well, as you said, I wrote my book, Neither Liberal Nor Conservative Be, and I am a management professional. And I had a job where I was dealing with the federal government, and I was just dismayed by how it was functioning. In other words, when you look at the basics of management, we're not following those basics. And so my book is about, you know, how do we get back to following those basics of management that we all use in business and nonprofit and running a household and everything else. So I'm out promoting the book, and I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. And I do a presentation to a service club. And after my presentation, I had someone come up to me and say, you know, the reason we're really not doing that, you know, in other words, you have good ideas about how it should run, but the reason it's not running like that is because of the way we run our elections, and particularly the kind of ballot we used. And so I was intrigued by that question. And I looked into it, and I found out that the person who had spoken up to me was absolutely correct. The issue we have, and obviously there's a lot of people who are dissatisfied with how government functions right now. And I'm going to tell you that the basic reason that the majority of us are dissatisfied is because of the way we run our elections, and in particular, the kind of ballot we used. It's just that simple.
You're talking about plurality voting mechanism that we use?
Yes, with the technical name for it, the ballot you use right now, you go in the voting booth, is known either, it's the same ballot, two different names, either is the first past the post ballot or the winner take all ballot. And that ballot restricts your choice as a voter and enables the duopoly that you mentioned earlier.
So what is ranked choice voting? I mean, how is that going to solve this problem? Can you kind of walk us through what that looks like and how it's going to solve this first past the post plurality sort of voting mechanism?
Sure. Okay. Let's get into that. Is right now the ballot you use right now, that first past the post ballot, if you have multiple candidates there on the ballot, then there's the candidate you're totally opposed to, the candidate you normally vote for but you're not satisfied, and the candidate you'd really like to vote for but you're afraid to vote for that candidate. And that's because you're afraid that by voting for the candidate you really want to vote for, that you're going to enable the candidate you most oppose to win. Now, another technical term that we in the voting world use, that is called the spoiler scenario. You're afraid that you're going to spoil the end result by voting for this other candidate. Okay. Think of this too. Let me make a more economic example that I think will help people make more sense of it. You probably have a manufacturer of automobile that you prefer to deal with. You drive this kind of car made by this manufacturer than you would anybody else. And there's another manufacturer that you just would not buy from. Okay. And if there were only two of those manufacturers and the manufacturer you preferred suddenly started making clunkers, then where do you go? You don't have any place to go. But because of our competition in a free market, quote unquote, free market economy, if the manufacturer you like starts making clunkers, you don't have to end up considering buying from the other manufacturer that you don't like. There are several others. For example, if you really like Chrysler, that's who you normally buy from, but you dislike Ford, okay? Now, if Chrysler starts messing up, Ford is still messed up in your opinion. Now you can go to Chevrolet. You can go to Toyota. You can go to GMC. You can go to Honda. Mercedes, keep naming them, right? There is lots of competition out there, other reputable people that you can go to. But the ballot you have right now messes that up, okay? And to use a baseball example, it being the start of the baseball season for most of us, the ballot we use now, they say in baseball that you can't steal second with your foot on first. And the ballot we use now is a ballot that keeps your foot politically on first. There's no stealing of the base. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So what changes? What's better? And here's one other weakness I want to bring up about this ballot. One of the key phrases in the Declaration of Independence is consent of the governed. Okay? Now, in other words, whoever occupies a seat in your representatives and represents you and votes to approve budgets, set policy, appoint judges, et cetera, okay, should represent the majority of the people within their geographical limitations that they represent. All right. So how can you say that you are governing your seat, occupying your seat in the legislature or in a executive government position? How do you say that you represent the consent of the governed if you were elected with less than a majority of the vote? Okay. And the ballot we use now does not guarantee a majority winner. You can get one, it can happen, but it's not guaranteed. And so that's why, and when you have people that get elected, when we have multiple candidates, somebody gets elected with 40%, that means the minority defeated the majority. So ranked choice voting overcomes that. And how this works is you still have the list of names top to bottom, and then you have the row of ovals like you had before. But now, instead of just a single row of ovals, you have probably at least three rows of ovals to the right of the name. So you mark your first choice in the left-hand column of ovals, your second choice in the middle column, and your third choice in the right-hand column. Now we go through and we do a calculation. Does somebody have 50% plus one or better, in other words, a majority of the votes cast for first choices? If we do, we have a winner. The majority has spoken. This is the winner. Thank you for playing. It's all over. But if no one has a majority, then we go to the candidate, and we'll keep this simple. We'll say we had three candidates. We go to the candidate who had the fewest first choice votes. That candidate is now defeated. And so we are able to, I mean, you only vote once. You only mark that ballot once. And then the data is consolidated. consolidated and it's run through an algorithm program. And everyone who voted for that defeated candidate is their first choice. We go to their ballot and we say, okay, who are these people's second choice? And we transfer their votes for the next round of voting to the candidate that they prefer. Now, I usually get the question, and let's bring this up. What if I didn't want either one of the other candidates and I just wanted to vote for one? Would my vote count? Yes, it would. But if you voted for the one that's defeated, you are now not part of the final decision here when there's the automatic runoff between the other two candidates. Dan, do you think I'm making sense here?
Yeah. What you're angling for is that eventually somebody is going to emerge with 50% plus one, right? So they have the mandate then, or they have the popular mandate at that point.
Right. Yeah. And so what happens is we do the vote transfer and then we recalculate. Okay, of those two remaining candidates, which one has 50% plus one or better? So this works well for us. You were able to vote for fear, perhaps, for the candidate that you wanted. And if that candidate didn't win, well, now your vote transfers to the other candidate who's your next choice. So you get to participate in deciding that. Ranked choice voting is the path to political peace for all of us. And that's because if we're using ranked choice voting, when it all is said and done, the majority of voters are going to be able to say one of two things about a particular race. Well, so-and-so was my first choice, and I'm glad they won, number one. Or number two, so-and-so wasn't my first choice, but they were one of my choices, and I'm satisfied with them winning. So the majority are satisfied. The minority is dissatisfied. Think of the calming effect that will have on us as a society to have all majority winners at all levels of office.
Well, you know, I think it figures into several different places or several different ways into our society. For one, I think it would incentivize politicians to not do negative advertising, right? Because realize that, hey, I may not be the first choice of people, but if I make fun of that other candidate, I'm probably not going to be the second choice. So I would think you'd stay away from the political mudslinging that goes on, the negative ads that we see all the time.
Exactly. And because you can no longer win an election with a plurality. And that means you have to expand your proposed policies to be inclusive of a majority of voters. And you have to be, as you say, the choice of more than just your narrow base of voters in order to win an election.
Yeah. Well,
this is a much better system.
Yeah, I think it's there's also this phenomenon that comes up in our current system where you can be somewhat guaranteed you're going to win simply because of the way your district has been gerrymandered. So there's no incentive to do better, right? I mean, if you're, say, a Republican in a highly Republican district, even though a lot of people probably don't like you, they dislike the Democrats even more, so they're just going to vote for the Republican. And as a candidate, you don't have any incentive, really, to really work toward the will of the people or work for the will of the people. You can pretty much do whatever you want as long as you belong to the Republican Party. We can make the same, the opposite argument about Democratic Party. As long as you're in a safe district, you have no incentive to do any better, right?
I mean, what is the approval rating of Congress right now? Something like 16%?
Yeah, I think it's, pretty low. Yeah. It's about the same as my bowling score.
Yeah, about 96% of the incumbents who run will be reelected. Now, you tell me what profession you could be in where you're getting those kind of ratings for your job performance and still retain your job.
I can't think of any.
This is what it's supposed to be all about. This is, again, about the management and then performance. We look to people, okay, the majority of people want this kind of performance from their elected representative, okay? And are they getting that performance? And if they don't, then there should be a consequence for that. That is the ideal that we've learned That is the meritocracy that we want in this country. And we have a political system that does not enable us to enact, to make that meritocracy happen with our political system. You mentioned something here that I want to expand on a little bit, and that is to say the benefit and the application a local nonpartisan election would have one result, a partisan primary election would have a second one, and a general election would have a third. Now, you're mentioning about people not wanting to do things. The other day, Lisa Murkowski, the U.S. Senator from Alaska, broke ranks with her party and voted to approve one of the President Biden's nomination for an assistant in the Department of Justice. Now, why would Murkowski do that? Because Alaska just approved in this last election ranked choice voting going forward. And they're going to have a, the way they did it, they're going to have a primary election with, it's a what we call a jungle primary. It's not a party primary. It's everybody's names in a hat. And the top four are going, the top four finishers will then go to the general election where they will use ranked choice voting to determine the ultimate winner. So you see, Murkowski now is not afraid of her political party's primary and having to contend with only a limited number of voters and having voters who are even more zealots to the right than she is, and her losing her job to someone who's more of a zealot than she wants to be.
Yeah.
Again, if that makes sense, Dan.
Yeah.
Well, that's so. That actually,
this is why more.
Go ahead.
Please go ahead.
I was going to say you're hitting upon something here that I wanted to ask the next question actually, which was other ideas such as top four or top five open primaries. This actually complements ranked choice voting, and that I believe is what you're talking about in Alaska at this point, correct?
Yes, and that top four is done with ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
So, you know, they get it reduced down to the top four candidates. You know, you might have eight candidates. And they get it to eight, and it's not just after one round of voting. They determine, well, you know, because there might be somebody who's number five initially, who, if you were just doing straight plurality voting, would be out. But with ranked choice voting, there has been a split in the vote between two similar candidates, and now that candidate might be end up being in the top four. This is why we do have been doing here. Last year, my group up in Nebraska just did the same thing based on some local elections, where we do exit surveys. And what we do is we have a graphic that we show people. We show them the old ballot. We show them the limitations of that ballot. Then we explain ranked choice voting to them. Then we ask two questions. Do you like, on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being you really like it, how much do you like this? And we ask, okay, on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being very easy, how easy is this concept to understand? And we get overwhelming majorities from exiting voters who say that they like it and they find it easy to understand. This last time for the general election in November, I freelanced a question on my own, and I had about 80 people that I surveyed that day. And the freelance question I asked was, knowing what you know now, going forward, yes or no, would you prefer to use ranked choice voting? And again, I had about 80% of those that I surveyed tell me, yes, I would rather use ranked choice voting.
Yeah. But here's the problem, though. We could talk about what's going on in Missouri here, and I like to use Missouri in this podcast, not only because, you know, well, both you and I happen to live here. But it is indicative of a lot of other states in what we would call flyover territory and often feels overshadowed by the coasts. But nevertheless, plays an important part and pivotal part in the nation's politics. But here's what's going on in Missouri. You know, Republicans enjoy a supermajority in the House and the Senate, as well as the governor's mansion, as you know. This is called the trifecta. They're not at all incentivized to implement ranked choice voting, are they? I mean, because you say that a lot of people like this. You've surveyed them yourselves, and you find out that a lot of people want this. But is situation like in Missouri, where you have a supermajority of one party, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, what's their incentive to change the system? They're benefiting from it the way it is, right?
The place that we bring up ranked choice voting, the place where they have an interest in it in particular, speaking of Missouri Republicans and the Republican Party, and I appeal to you folks, look here, you have a problem, same problem everybody else does. And that is to say, in your partisan primary election, don't you want a majority winner? Don't you want the person who gets the nomination to go forward to the general election to be the consensus majority part choice of the party membership? Because the ballot you're using now will not do that. Mm-hmm. Look at the train wreck we are about to have in Missouri for the U.S. Senate seat. Roy Blunt has said he's not going to run again. That set off a free-for-all. I've seen news reports and speculation. Right now, there's only two candidates declared on the Republican side, but there might be as many as six candidates.
Yeah, they're all lining up for it. Yeah.
Okay. And then they are substantial people who've been in Congress for a while, men and women on the Republican side. And so internally to their party, they want to make a good pick. They don't want somebody getting the nomination with less than a majority of the vote. I often ask him, what does your party stand for? I mean, regardless of who your party is right now, think of it this way. Ask this question. If someone wins your nomination with, say, 26% of the vote, what does your party stand for? It stands for whatever that candidate and his or her 26% say that it stands for, okay? Versus when you break it down, you go in through a process, you get it down to the final two if necessary, and somebody wins with a majority of the vote, the party as a whole is saying, this is the individual we want to represent our values and our policies. We think they are the best candidate we could put forward to the general public, which has an amazing number of independents now, to cause them to vote for our candidate so that we win. Yeah, I'm hoping that is something that appeals to you. So in other words, 100 years ago, about 100 years ago, there was a very popular song that came out of the World War I era. And it was a question that people had. And it was the title of the song was, or the line in the song is, how are you going to keep them down on the farm once they've seen Paris? In other words, you had all these young Americans who went to France and off the farm and fought in the thing. And, you know, while they were there, they got to see Paris, France, with all of its enticements. And so, how are those guys going to be satisfied to going back to the plow and the farm fields and stuff once they've seen that? And so it's my thing too here, my belief, that once people start voting with ranked choice voting, even if it's just in primaries, it's a hop, skip, and a jump to say, you know, hey, wait a minute, why can't I vote with ranked choice voting in the general election? Why can't I use ranked choice voting in a local election? Now, in a local election, the incentive is a little different, as I was telling someone earlier this week. And that is that with the way we normally do it in St. Louis and in the St. Louis County, I should say, and Kansas City, the local election is a nonpartisan election. And so we have an initial primary to determine the top two candidates, and then we have a runoff election. Both those elections cost us an immense amount of money. If we were using ranked choice voting, we could have just one election, and by people being able to rank the choice, we could emerge with a consensus majority choice for mayor and the city council, and we could take the money that we spend on that second election and put it right back in our pocket to do other things with. Yeah. So there's the incentive there to go to ranked choice voter.
So do we have any legislators or any politicians in any of these states, Missouri in particular, but other states as well, that are part of the majority party that are on board with ranked choice voting at this point? Do you have any heroes, in other words?
Yes. Yes. Dan Stacey out of Blue Springs is working very hard to get us ranked choice voting. And we just discovered, and I'm sorry, I'm going to blank on his name here, but there's a Democrat, I'm going to blank on his name, who took one of Stacey's bills and reintroduced it this session. So we still have a couple of weeks left here. If your listeners could help us out, call your state representative, your state senators, particularly your state representatives, HB 1137 enables there to be an experiment in one of the counties in Missouri with ranked choice voting. If we could get this approved in 2021, then we can do an experiment in 22 and then use the data in 22 to hopefully get ranked choice voting passed in 23 to be used in 24.
Yeah.
So kind of a long process, but this is the way the system works as we attempt to bring things around.
Is that how they did it in Maine? Because Maine recently implemented ranked choice voting statewide as well as Alaska, but I heard that it was a bit more of a struggle in Maine. At least that's what I heard anyways.
Oh, absolutely. It was.
Yeah.
Yes. Maine did everything by initiative, by petitions. And so they had a situation where they knew the majority of the folks in Maine were opposed, in particular to the person who was elected governor. That governor was elected with only a plurality of the vote. And so they started a petition drive and got the issue on the ballot and passed it that they wanted to use ranked choice voting. And then once the legislature came back into session, the legislature tried to override the voting public and do away with ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was there was a people's petition to override the legislature. Hmm. And they succeeded in that. So they indeed used ranked choice voting then for the first time for everything below president. And then in this last election, Maine once again expanded the use of ranked choice voting to include the presidency. And once again, the Republican members in Maine tried to override that. And there was a second petition and they lost again. So Maine is using ranked choice voting now. And as I said earlier, Alaska has also approved ranked choice voting. We're trying, there are movements all across the country. Just this week, the state legislature in Utah approved the ability of local municipalities to use ranked choice voting if they so desire. Mm-hmm. And there was one county in Utah that said, no matter where you are in the state, if you use ranked choice voting, we'll count the votes for you. So if your local county doesn't want to do the county, we'll do it for you. And so Salt Lake City and six other cities in Utah have said going forward that they're going to use ranked choice voting. And it's in the elections right now that are being held for mayor in New York City. They're using ranked choice voting. So it's a thing of we welcome all help that we can get to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned to it earlier. Let me just, you were talking about independents and people in the parties and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I was at a conference. I remember when it was. It was in January of 2008. There was this big conference. It was even up on C-SPAN. And they had a number of current and former members of the of the Senate, ex-governors and so forth, to talk about the elections and voting. And Missouri's own Jack Danforth, former U.S. Senator from here in Missouri, was at that conference. And one of the things he said was that it used to be that political parties put forth proposed policies and candidates who were meant to appeal to independent voters in order to sway the election for the party. And he said, they don't do that anymore. What they do is they put out the policies and the candidates they like, and they tell independent voters to take it or leave it. This is what we're giving you. See? And again, ranked choice voting will force the two political parties to go back to that. And why? Because it could be possible that a third party will come along that will appeal to that independent party, and they'll even have people who are supposedly registered for their own party who will abandon them and go for that new third party. Why? Because they can. They have no fear that something else is going to go wrong. So this is why let's start first at trying to get ranked choice voting in our cities. We'll continue at Missourians for Ranked Choice Voting to try to get it statewide. And by the way, the vast majority of the voting machines that are in Missouri are capable of ranked choice voting. There's about 9 counties where the machines would need a software upgrade. There's only a few isolated places where the machines are not capable of using ranked choice voting. And if H.R. 1 passes the Senate and is signed by Biden, one of the things that's in that bill, I believe, is grants for cities, local municipalities, and states to buy election equipment that will use ranked choice voting if the population so desires.
Just for perspective, there's actually 114 counties in Missouri and St. Louis City itself, which is not part of a county. So you're saying 9 of them would need some sort of upgrade. So that's actually, it looks like we're, 90% there in terms of our capabilities of our voting machines.
Absolutely, we are.
I want to go back to something earlier. Yes. You talked about voter initiatives, and you talked about how everything went down in Maine with an initiative, and I believe you'd call it a referendum, which goes back and tries to undo some of the things the legislature has done. Now, in Missouri at this point, I've read a number of the bills, and they're making it more difficult to get initiatives and referendums. They've increased the number of signatures required for voter initiatives, as well as referendums. And here's the thing, I read in some of the fine print of one of the bills, it says that any judge, or not any judge, but a judge can reject a voter initiative based on what I would consider arbitrary technicalities. Even after all the signatures have been gathered, a judge can still reject it, essentially killing the initiative before it has a chance to amend the Constitution. So this is very draconian. It's the opposite of what I would consider participatory democracy envisioned by our founding fathers. So is this one of the paths that Missourians for Ranked Choice Voting is going to take to use initiatives to implement it, like the way that Maine did?
If we are unable to get the legislature to adopt this, then we're going to be forced to go that route. What we're hopeful of at Better Ballot KC, we are very optimistic about being able to get ranked choice voting being used in Kansas City. Well, we think that there are a lot of people who live in Kansas City who will use that method, who have friends and relatives in other places in the state. Yeah. And so I go back to my phenomenon of how you're going to keep them down on the farm. Those folks are going to talk. They say, hey, what is this ranked choice voting that you're using to vote with? Tell me about that. Oh, wow, I really like that.
Yeah.
And so then it's a matter of you calling the people that represent you in your state and saying, hey, what do you know about ranked choice voting? and kind of feel them out, you know, don't just, well, I don't know very much. Well, here's what I know. Knowing that, will you support legislation to get ranked choice voting in Missouri? And if they say, well, you know, I need to look at that. And then your reply should be, you know, that's the wrong answer. What I want you to say is, yes, I will. Yes, I will support the legislation to change to ranked choice voting. Yes, I will vote for the funding, if any, that is needed in order to make ranked choice voting happen in this state. And if you can't tell me that you're going to vote for it, then maybe I'll find somebody else who will when you run for re-election. And that is the kind of language that elected officials understand. You know, we go first with the carrot. You know, we really like this, and I'm hopeful that you are responsive to things that your constituents want. But when they sit there and blow up their backs, they show a history of voting against it, you let them know, hey, you're voting against my wishes. And we go back to this thing of, if you don't perform in the way in which I expect you to perform, then I'm not going to give you another opportunity to continue to perform in your position. That's what we've got to do.
Got it. So the first attack, obviously, which is probably the most effective attack, I shouldn't really call it an attack. It's just an approach, I should say. Your first approach is to really go to the
approach there.
Yeah, I hate, you know, everybody uses the word fight and attack, and when you're talking about politics, and I myself, as you can see, I just am guilty of it, and I'm trying to remove that from my lexicon at this point. Anyways, the first approach then would be what I would consider the most effective, and perhaps the simplest approach would be to build local support for it, but also approach legislatures, like you say, and get them to initiate ranked choice voting in Missouri statewide. So we have an election coming up next year in 2022 for all the state legislatures, and I think half or a third of the state senators. This is a good time to start that process, you know, start talking to legislatures. But I guess if that fails, then you have to go to Plan B, which is voter initiatives, which is going to be, as I mentioned earlier, going to be increasingly difficult if these bills in Missouri pass, making a voter incentive or voter initiatives much more difficult.
Yes, exactly right. You have to raise a lot of money. But I say this, why should we have to do it by initiative? Why should we have to raise money and stand out and do the things that are required to do a referendum? This is such common sense. And we get such a positive response to this when we do exit surveying. We know the average Missourian, once you explain this to them, like I say, 70, 80% of them are going to say, yes, I like this. I want this. And that's what has to be emphasized. This is not one of these things where it's a very contentious thing. This just makes sense. And we should be able to contact our state representatives and our state senators and say, this makes sense. I want this. Why won't you give it to me? It's just that simple of language talking to people. Remember, you elected these people. They work for you. You don't work for them. They work for you. And it's their job to pass policies and laws to give you things that you want. And this is something we should all want. So,
well, to that end, then, let me ask you this. What sort of organizing is taking place right now on the ground, specifically in Missouri? I know all the other states have their own organizations as well, and we can talk a little bit about that. But in Missouri right now, with Missourians for Ranked Choice Voting, are they now gathering volunteers for this effort?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You go to volunteer.morcv.org or at morcv.org itself and sign up to participate with us. For example, I was telling you about doing the exit survey. You know, we could also do that other times as well. We need people at county fairs and other things as COVID begins to give us more leeway, although we're able to do this in a COVID safe manner. Mm-hmm. But we need people standing out. And what we normally do is we put a sign up, tape a sign to the table. I get three little signs, and not really. You can read the signs, big print from a distance. And it says, ask me about ranked choice voting. And I've got this graphic that we use that shows both the current system and the ranked choice system, and say, hey, can you spare me a couple of minutes? And we go through this thing of, here's the ballot you use now, here's its limitations, here's the ballot we could be using. So, let me ask you two questions now, or three questions. Do you like it? Do you think it's easy to understand? Would you rather use it going forward? Then, and we give people the opportunity to help us out. And the more you tell your friends and your family about it, and tell them to in turn tell their friends, their wider families. When people see this, it's just a no-brainer that yeah, this is a better way to vote than the way we're using right now. It's like so many other things in life that before computers, this was just in the too hard box. But now with computers, this is easy and it makes our lives better.
Yeah, well, before computers, there was still runoff type voting, but it was run as a separate election like they did in Georgia recently with their Senate runoff. And that is extremely expensive, very cumbersome. It's hard to get people to come back to the polls twice, you know. So, instant runoff is just, I totally agree. It is a total no-brainer. But as long as you're talking about that, there are other organizations that that advocate for the same thing. There's Fair Vote, Represent Us, even one called democracyfound.org, which is started by, Catherine Gale, who wrote the book, was it The Politics Industry? And so are you working with other organizations in Missouri to help advocate for this?
Yeah, yes, very, very much an ally. I've been working with fairvote.org for a long time. A lot of activity going on in each of the states. I mean, I don't know, it's not just Missouri.
Right.
It's not just Nebraska. It's not just Kansas. Every state now, people are beginning to realize, hey, we want this, but if we want this, we're going to have to huff and puff. So you can Google, you can get on Facebook, you're going to find an organization that is advocating for this that will put you in touch with local or statewide organizations like ours that you can become a part of and add your shoulder to the wheel to make this happen. Very much like Represent Us, I very much like fairvote.org. If you go to the fairvote.org website, they have lots and lots of resources to explain ranked choice voting in even more depth than I've just been able to do for it.
They also advocate for multi-winner districts as well, which is, we haven't touched upon that concept here, but that is also another, I think, a more, even more fair type of approach to representation of people.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that could be very easy to do, believe it or not, people don't know. Do you know why the House of Representatives is stuck at 435 members? Is that in the Constitution? No, it is not. It is based on a 1929 law that capped the size of this House of Representatives at 435 when we had a population of about 121 million. Now we have 200 million more people and we're still capped at 435. If we were to expand that and take states like, for example, Wyoming, who only has sufficient population, and a lot of people point to Wyoming because it's usually the smallest population state we have. The Constitution says everybody gets at least one representative in the House of Representatives. So if you were to expand it according to the population, so that Wyoming had three representatives. In other words, you use Wyoming as your benchmark. Wyoming's the lowest population. They got X number of people and they get three representatives. So then you go into each other state and you divide their population by Wyoming's population. Okay. And then multiply whatever number that is times three. And then now you get a very highly expanded House of Representatives, which helps to offset the fact that the low population states get two electors despite their low population because of the number of senators that they have.
Right.
So that helps to merge that out. And so what that would also mean for a state like Wyoming is if you had proportional representation, in other words, you have three members of the House of Representatives, you do ranked choice voting, and you determine the top three vote getters, and one of those vote getters is Republican, and or two of those winners are Republicans, but one is a Democrat, or one is Republican, one is a Democrat, one is Libertarian. Okay, so each one of those parties have a representative in the House of Representatives. John Adams talked a long time ago about that we should structure the House of Representatives so it is a reflection of how the population is overall in the country. And right now it's not doing that.
Yeah, I believe you're referring to what's called the Wyoming rule. Wyoming, I think, has a population, the last time I checked, it was slightly less than 700,000. So you divide that by three and you come up with like, 230,000 or something like that. That yes. would be 230,000 people per representative. And I made this observation on a previous podcast that if you're living in California, which is where I lived for many years, and you want to vote 3.5 times for president, you can do that legally. And everybody's like, oh, how do you do that? That's illegal. I said, no, it isn't illegal. All you got to do is move to Wyoming. And you get automatically 3.5 times more representation in the presidential election. But it's true because of that phenomenon you point out there. It's the House of Representatives at 435 at this point. I believe it should be more. Physically, I don't know how they're going to do it because it looks pretty crowded on that floor. But somehow or another, that particular problem pales in comparison to the much bigger problem of getting more representation for people.
Yeah, they might have to build a new building, but then again, why? And I know DC's been the capital forever, but I've often said too, is why don't we, as you let your listeners know, I was military for a long time, and they build up housing on a base, you know, because they know they're going to have X number of bodies there. By the same token, why don't we build housing for the people that we elect to office? And there's some pros and cons here, but the idea is that you're not, and yes, I guess these guys get a housing allowance per se, but if they all had to live together, then they all might get along a lot better.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. That's a really good point. Never thought about that before. So as we're coming up toward the end right here, I'd like to do like a call to action. You mentioned before MORCV.org is a place where people in Missouri anyways can get involved in ranked choice voting through the organization you're advocating for. There's also fairvote.org, all one word, fairvote.org. Is there any other places or things people can do, calling their representatives or things like that to help out?
Yes. Thank you for the question and the thought. Like I say, there's a number. If, for example, I have, Rank the Vote Nebraska, which has both a Facebook page and on Twitter and et cetera. They're looking for the same thing. They're looking for people to help do the kind of things that we've just been talking about here. If you go to fairvote.org, there's a volunteer sign up there, and they'll help put you in touch with an organization in your locality that is working on ranked choice voting. That is a service they would provide.
Okay.
But as I say, you can go there. If I may make a plug for my own personal webpage and Facebook page.
Absolutely.
And your book, too. TheCenterStrikesBack.org. I've got links there as well for, you know, the tentacles reach out from there. Again, it's just like the Empire Strikes Back, just change the one word, TheCenterStrikesBack.org.
Okay.
And of course, I want to mention MissouriRCV.org. And since we are primarily Missouri, also Better Ballot KC. And I'm going to get here. We also have St. Louis RCV, STL RCV. Each have our own community activities and are trying to bring ranked choice voting to Missouri, as we've spoken about.
Okay.
You might really get involved by, like, say, volunteer to do our exit surveying or other surveying that we're going to do at the Missouri State Fair or county fairs, where it's a chance to show people what ranked choice voting is. It's a very nonpartisan presentation. Like I say, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, this is a proposal that makes sense. You're not going to get a lot of pushback, but you're going to get a lot of interest. And that's how we're going to get ranked choice voting in Missouri and in all 50 states.
Okay. And just to also mention that fairvote.org has, I believe they're in all 50 states. So it is a nationwide organization with local chapters in every state too. So people outside of the Midwest listening to this podcast can get some advice and direction from fairvote.org. In the meantime, you've also written a book. Would you like to talk just very briefly about that? Plug your book, if you will, and let people know what you've done.
Thank you. My book is Neither Liberal Nor Conservative Be, an Action Plan for People Disgusted by Polarized Politics. And as I said earlier, it's a book about using good management in our politics. The approach is we should be looking at all of the issues we have and the problems we have from the standpoint of what is the solution that does the greatest amount of good for the longest period of time for the greatest number of people, balanced against trying to do the least possible damage to the fewest number of people for the shortest period of time, and is affordable within the competing demands that we have for funds available. And so I wrote that book. Then I discovered that the need that we really have, what's keeping us from operating in that fashion, is the ballot we use. And so I have a DD program about that, why the two-party system isn't working and what to do about it. Both the book and the DVD are available either through my website at thecenterstrikesback.org. You pay through PayPal, or you can go to amazon.com and it's available there. The book also is, I think you found out, Dan, is available either in soft cover, or it's available on a Kindle.
And, you know, one of the things I really like about your book is you talk about developing your personal philosophy, for your personal political philosophy. And I think that's very important, because a lot of times one of the concepts you brought up in your book is that if you don't have a good foundation upon which to stand, you're going to be swayed by people who have a foundation upon which to stand. You'll basically gravitate toward them. And I think your book is actually very key, and it says that, you know, a good self-defense mechanism is to first sit down, ask yourself, what is your personal political philosophy, and then use that as your compass, if you will, to navigate through the political landscape out there.
One of the people that I am a student of, not a follower, but a student, is a man named Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N. Jim, unfortunately, has passed from among us, but his tapes and his books and his DVDs are out there for you to listen to. And one of Jim's teachings was that if you know how to set the sail, you can make the boat go the way you want it to go, no matter which way the wind is blowing. But when you don't know how to set the sail, then you're at the mercy of the wind to blow whichever way it goes. And it's the same way with your own political philosophy. And if I may add to that a little bit, I make the point a little bit. I'm not somebody who's opposed to political parties. I think political parties serve a good function. The difficulty is that the election laws we have and the ballot makes it so hard for there to be a competitive third party. And that's why I'm advocating this change. But if think of a philosophy this way. If this was a sports show and we were talking about football, American football, and I were to ask, what is the most, at the end of the season, and you had the most effective offense you possibly could have, what percentage of your plays would have been running plays and what percentage of your plays would be passing plays? Would it be 50-50, 40-60, 60-40, 75-25? Your political philosophy is the same way. You're establishing yourself as a philosophy. Where do I want to be? And, you know, within the confines of a season's worth of games, there's going to be times when you need to run the ball, and there's going to be times when you need to pass the ball. And so you've got to be able to be both. And you can't say, well, no, I only run the ball, or I only pass the ball. Because if you do, then you're going to find yourself at some point in a bind because of your lack of flexibility. And so the same way, if you say to yourself, well, I'm a liberal or I'm a conservative, well, what does that mean in 50 words or less? You know, without just telling me, well, I'm for this and I'm against that. You know, you got to have a philosophy. And my philosophy, as I said earlier, is that thing about, you know, what, when you look at problems from a standpoint of governing, what is the solution that gives you the greatest amount of good for the largest number of people for the longest period of time, et cetera, like that. Mm-hmm. So, Dan, I appreciate that very much, the opportunity to express that.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for writing the book. It was a pretty good read. We've been talking with Larry Bradley, a Missouri native who spent many years in the armed services as well as business, and who currently devotes his time to the implementation of election reforms, particularly ranked choice voting in all 50 states. Larry, thank you for dropping by and explaining voter reforms with us today.
Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Democracy on the Move, a tribute to all those people and organizations who dare to reimagine our nation and drive it back to its true democratic principles. Please tune in each week where we will feature guests and topics that will help keep you in touch with our march toward a more perfect union. If you have any suggestions for stories and or people you think we should cover at Democracy on the Move, please contact us through our website contact page at democracyonthemove.org/contact, or send us an email at info@democracyonthemove.org. You can also comment on our Twitter page at All on the Move. If you find today's podcast interesting and informative, please tell your friends and family about us. And if you would like to help sponsor the podcast at Democracy on the Move, please contact us through the website or email. I'm Dan Schaefer, your host for today's podcast, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. It's been my pleasure to be with you today. Please have a safe week ahead, and we hope you will tune in to our next show.